Oh, sorry, folks. I didn't realize I'm running late, and so is the special co-host we have today. Actually, I called Nighthawk instead of calling the auto server. The host will be back in just a minute, who's sitting in. It's going to be Vinny Eastwood, and he was setting up his cameras and stuff so he can videotape it. So this is going to prove to be an interesting show, I'm sure. Really don't know what topic he was going to discuss. He asked about having people call in, so I imagine we're going to have call-ins. But I think the time difference is a little confusing. There we go. Welcome back. Welcome back, Vinny. We're live. I'm not sure. We're not hearing you.
That's probably because
there you go. There you go. Oh, you got it.
Welcome, everyone.
Welcome to the show, man. Enjoy.
The show, normally hosted by Siobhan Cyresi, and I'm Vinny Eastwood from the VinnyEastwoodShow.com, sitting in for Siobhan today. And we'd like to take some callers today, perhaps, if that's at all possible. I don't half know what the call-in number actually is, but you can get the call-in number at freedomslips.com or freedomslips.com, freedomlips.com. I don't know. If freedom is slipping, okay, and I don't think that anybody who's paying attention would disagree with that. Yeah, freedom's slowly slipping into the water in a Titanic type fashion, you know, with very few lifeboats and everybody else just going, we're all gonna drown in the cold, icy water of tyranny. Yeah, I think freedom slips is kind of appropriate, but in actual fact, it's freedom's lips, isn't it? And that's what we're going to be talking about all the time in the coming months, is just what is freedom? Okay, I'm going to like try and define this to somebody, because a lot of people with many, many different definitions, and you kind of wonder, okay, what is freedom to me? Freedom to me is not having a boss, not having to do what other people tell me to do, having a choice in everything that I do. It's part of the reason why I am who I am now. I think it was like a couple of years back, maybe 5 years. Went through a series of jobs as a top salesman and what have you. Went up getting repeatedly messed around because never had a job really for 6 months longer than that, you know, because I became the best in whatever job I was doing. Doesn't matter whether it was picking grapes. Doesn't matter whether it was selling landline toll call packages to businesses. As soon as I became really good at it, the challenge was lost. And I got bored and tried to find other things that I could solve, i.e. other trouble and mischief that I could get into. And it became very apparent to me that those people whom were my employers didn't want any of that kind of stuff going on, because it made them look bad. And this is a very horrific consequence of being talented and working in the New World Order system at a slave job, because you do not have the luxury of being appreciated. In the truth movement, that luxury is afforded only, it seems, to those who have so much to give that it baffles people. I can tell people that I do routinely 2 hours of video and audio a day, uploaded to YouTube and uploaded on the website, do all the archiving, do all the editing myself. And to them, it sounds like an extraordinary feat. For me, it's nothing. To come here and willy-nilly host a Siobhan show for 2 hours, what a pleasure. What a grand offer. And I sure hope I don't mess it up. The concept I found difficult about work mostly is that you had to work for other people. And my preference is to work with other people. Collaboration, not competition, is the most efficient forms of production. There was a study conducted with people about how to run a supply chain business. Now, here's the scenario. You've got two routes to your destination. One route is very short, very straight, and the other route goes all the way around and takes a while. And the scenario is you've got a delivery company. Now, if you've got a delivery company, you want to get your products to the spot of delivery as quickly as possible so that you have as much profit and as little cost as possible, right? This short route had two gates, one at the front and one at the back, and they conducted a number of different experiments. When the two companies who were competing against each other along these routes, one had control of the end gate, one had control of the front gate. So if you had control of the front gate, you could enter through the shorter route, but unless the other company opened the end gate, you'd have to go back and go all the way around again. And they determined that once that control mechanism was in place, both of the companies made a little bit of money through competing with each other. They then gave all the controls of the gates to one company and not the other. And interestingly enough, they both actually made more money, even having one with more. And the third scenario was when the gates were opened and controlled jointly so that both of them were able to do the shorter route. And they found that through collaborating and actually helping each other, both of these companies actually wound up making more money than either of the other two scenarios combined. So in essence, it is the most efficient form of profit to care about your competitors, so-called, and to help them with their businesses and have them help you back, rather than the current corporate world, which is to sabotage your competition so that they cannot compete with you if they've come up with something better than you. You know what I'm saying? Some dude comes up with a free energy device. Shell gives him a call. Says, hey, mate, we'll give you a couple of $1 million for that free energy device and also sign this contract. And you'll never invent another one and you'll never talk to nobody about it. Okay. No, thank you. All right, then. That's fine. We'll be back later. And sure enough, they do come back later and they ransack his house and his garage and they steal the free energy device. And they shoot him in the head. And sure enough, he wasn't able to compete anymore. That's called monopoly. Doesn't work as a system of government. Have you noticed how everything's starting to centralize? Amalgamate. What it means is you're giving greater power to fewer people. That's what centralizing and amalgamation really is at the end of the day. This works as well as for business as it does for government, as it does for any NGO that you could conceivably think of. When you have scenarios like this, when you have centralized decision making, diversity of decision making, which is the thing that really makes human society function in a reactive, creative capacity kind of gets destroyed. And that's what we have in terms of a gargantuan New World Order apparatus. I was on the mainstream media for the first time ever yesterday. I was the subject of a article piece about chemtrails / alternative media. And this reporter, Mr. Alistair Bone, very nice guy, gave me half a pack of cigarettes. I've got to love that. His claim is that for chemtrails to exist, you'd have to have 5,000 people minimum, all part of the conspiracy. And I said to him, no, they wouldn't all know about it. It's compartmentalization. They've all got different jobs. Guy who's making the chemicals doesn't know the pilot who's spraying them. The people who are fixing the plane don't know the guy who's making the chemicals either. So nobody knows really what the heck's going on. They're all in a compartmentalized fashion. They might get an inkling, and if they started some digging, sure, they'd find out. But where did he get this number of 5,000? The answer is he made it up. So that's journalism. You make up a bar, and then you make the conspiracy theorist go under it. I didn't think that was a terribly bright idea, but I don't know. It kind of irked me somewhat, because you have a lot of people involved in conspiracy. Even myself, I'm sure I'm probably engaged in some form of conspiracy or another, whether or not I'm consciously aware of it. Who knows? I could be mind-controlled by flying spaghetti monsters from space for all I know. However, you judge a person based on their actions, and anybody who trusts the government, who trusts Major Mickey as corporations, who trusts the military, who trusts corporate and quote-unquote government intelligence agencies, CIA, MI5, SIS, whatever alphabet soup you want to put in there, they all come to the same thing. They all have three letters, and all those three letters really translate to, at the end of the day, whether it's the FBI, the CIA, or the NSA, or MI5, or MI6, it's just NWO. Simple as that. Apparently there's a share marking on private intelligence companies as well. Allegedly, I think this is according to Michael Rupert from thewilderness.com, that the CIA and NSA, at least, I think, maybe even including the FBI, but they're 70% privately owned. You didn't know that, did you? Well, hold on a second. Does that mean the corporations own our government? No, it actually means the government owns the corporations. Right? Works like this. Dude named Clint Richardson had a look at some of the ownership documentation of major U.S. corporations. You know, McDonald's, Costco, Walmart, all those major Fortune 500 companies. And it turns out they're all owned by the government. Shareholders, the American, the shareholders, the American taxpayer. Holy cow. So there is no actual real competition. It's simply the government / corporation, same thing, in my opinion, at the moment anyway, working together to squeeze you, me, anybody else who ain't in on it, anybody who else ain't in the inner circle. None of us are aware of the positions we play. For 5,000 people to be involved in chemtrails and all of them knowing it, can you name me a single corporation, any or organization, any entity where you have 5,000 people involved, where everybody knows what the head of that entity is thinking and doing and how the company truly works and runs? Name me one, if you will. If this is the case, then my goodness, the world suddenly doesn't make sense to me anymore. 5,000 people in a company working together, all knowing what the CEO's job is, and could do it if he got a – no, it's not the way, man. We're all compartmentalized. The guy at the front serving you your burger at Macca's has no idea that there's 1,000 cows in that burger. I can guarantee you, CEO knows about it. He don't. When the training programs, they don't tell you about it, because it might prevent you from wanting to keep working there. And they might run out of slaves if they keep telling everybody the truth, you know?
Oh, Pharaoh, we have run out of slaves to serve Big Macs. Whatever will we do? Maybe I had to go work at Taco Bell.
The deadly, deadly serious side of conspiracy is like a poison, a toxin, if you will, for your mind. Look at this. You currently understand the world as a... imagine the scenario, sorry. You currently understand the world as a very nice, friendly, lovely place, sunshine and rainbows, and somebody informs you and proves to you that it's simply not the case. That worldview that was supporting your emotional stability suddenly collapses in a controlled demolition type fashion. As you do, you've got to pick yourself up again. People don't understand what the word wake up really means. Okay, again, picture another scenario. You're getting out of bed in the morning. What did you do before you got out of bed? Well, you woke up, didn't you? So, when people come out and they say, we want to wake up the masses, it's an ironic statement to me that we think we can actually wake people up. It's not the case. Nobody woke me up. There were several people that I listened to who planted seeds, who made me go off and watch 160, 170 documentaries in a couple of months' time, and gained a geometric knowledge. But it wasn't them that sat there and forced all that knowledge into me. I had the inclination to go and do it myself. I had the time to do it myself, conveniently enough. But what happens to normal people when they are confronted with a seed planting exercise is that this conspiracy theorist may, and by the way, conspiracy theorist just means a person who believes that there's powerful people who have a lot of influence, who use their power to maintain their influence. So conspiracy theorists figure out that 9/11 is an inside job. They figure out that there's chemtrails, and they figure out that there's so on and so forth. X number of conspiracies. And instead of researching into it and coming to grips with it entirely themselves, they then try to push it onto other people. People don't like things being pushed onto them, especially in vast quantity and magnitude if they're not prepared for it. It's like in the Matrix, you know, you don't free a mind until it's reached a certain once it's reached a certain age, because the mind has trouble letting go. Okay. So I found out a trick to this. It's comedy. You know, George Carlin, Bill Hicks, Lewis Black, Joe Rogan, and probably umpteen other different comedians who have very biting political commentary that is quite profound. Yet, that experience doesn't traumatize the audience with the burden of the information about the JFK assassination, that water in America is owned by companies, that free speech is being censored, and it's out of a political correctness paradigm to stop people from saying what they think. The audience, for some reason, is not perturbed by this. Why? Because you've got to package that toxin, the truth, with the cure. Let's be aware of it, but shed our fear of it, is the basic message. If you are capable of learning the truth, if you're not already been vaccinated umpteen times and have very little brain cells to rub together, you can figure this out. It's not that complicated. Douchebag decides that he wants to commit some douchebaggery, and he winds up lying to everybody and manipulating them so that they will think that douchebaggery is a good thing. You know, it's pretty straightforward, pretty simple like that. When people are woken, as it were, they have an inherent fear that if they come out publicly, they will be lambasted, they will be persecuted by their families, etc. Sure enough, they really are, invariably, much of the time. But this is because they themselves have perhaps not fully figured out everything. Does anybody else out there claim to have everything figured out? I certainly don't. I believe everything that I know to be true is, in fact, wrong. So at any point where somebody produces evidence that I am, in fact, wrong, it's indeed a learning experience. It is a thing to be celebrated. Being wrong means that you can go on continuing to be correct. There's an old saying, when an honest man discovers that he is wrong, he will either cease to be wrong or cease to be honest. I believe that many of us build up reputations upon being correct. I don't wish to do that. I wish to build up a rapport, not for being correct, but for just being honest and being open and being accepting of other people. Because if you want to scream, if you want to yell, if you want to listen for hours upon hours of incredibly intense intellectual conversation, you have much variety to pick from. However, if you are looking for somebody who will incorporate all those things and laugh and make you laugh at the same time, there is very little selection out there in terms of Patriot Talk Radio Truth Movement, save really myself. And if you go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, you'll see that I've interviewed Siobhan Cyresi and Dean other guests, whether that be Jordan Maxwell, Lindsay Williams, George Norrie from Coast to Coast, Benjamin Fulford, G. Edward Griffin, Tila Tequila, James Corbett from the Corbett Report, so on and so forth. There's an extraordinary list of really, really high level, incredibly talented people that I got. And this is the interesting thing, because maybe people might not be cognizant of who I am. This is where the preface, my reputation precedes me, truly comes from. Like some people are known by their works and some people are known by their associates. I'm known by both. And I don't know why the heck I've become so freaking popular. I don't know for sure. I'm just having a hell of a lot of fun doing it. And back onto this mainstream media guy that I was talking about who came here to interview me the other day. His claim was that if he was interviewing me here today and he was going to publish an article about me, therefore the mainstream media doesn't cover anything up. I've been on the street with a camera and a microphone for 5 years. Ambushed nearly every single suited, plaited, polished politician committing scumbaggery in the act. Conversed with many a mainstream journalist, asking them poignant questions, attempting to figure out the scenario that is going on here in New Zealand. And in 5 years, he's the very first journalist to ever even so much as give me an email asking a question, let alone coming on to do the interview. It's like everything happened at once. when you look at that as a context, okay, how many days are there in a year? 365. How many protests have I been to? About 200, 300, 400, something ridiculous. I go to everybody's protests pretty much just to film them, put them on YouTube because the media frickin' won't. Which is why I've now incidentally got more subscribers than the mainstream media and YouTube channels. In fact, I've got almost more subscribers than every single mainstream media outlet that has a presence on YouTube in this country combined. By myself. If the mainstream media was covering 1/1000th of what I do, I would have much less of an audience. But because they've left a gap wider than the Grand Canyon for people to fall into, their media apparatus in every sector that you look at is losing ratings beyond belief. Do you know what has higher ratings than primetime Fox News and CNN in America today? You know what has better ratings than that in the same time slot? What people would rather be watching than any number of different mainstream media news broadcast channels? You guessed it, the Chuck Norris Total Gym. It was, I'm not kidding, and I can see a reason for that. Oh, bro, it's Chuck Norris. Hell yeah! Why would I want to learn about the news when I can see Chuck Norris blow away Arabs on TV? There's a disconnect here, and the mainstream people actually. This is the reason why the conspiracy works so well. People who believe that they're doing good are simply doing good, kind of like little pinkies, amidst a fist that is smashing you in the face. Okay? There's a fist smashing you in the face, but after it smashes you in the face, there's this one little pinky that kind of rubs your cheek very gently to help you feel better about it. That's what mainstream media has in terms of coverage. And I'm intensely critical of it, mostly because of the fact... they don't, let's just say they don't respect us. All of us. They think the word conspiracy is in itself a bad thing. As if it doesn't really exist. Can I ask you, are there laws prohibiting the kidnapping of leprechauns? Anybody from Ireland know? No? Okay. Why? Because leprechauns don't exist! Allegedly. Are there laws against conspiracy? Why, yes. Yes, they are. But yet the mainstream media keeps going on about it as if conspiracies don't exist when they do. It's two or more people coming together to cause harm on another group of people without that group of people knowing about it. Doesn't that sound like every political party and major corporation that you've ever heard of? The definition of terrorism is in fact a system of government. You know, communism, socialism, fascism, capitalism, terrorism. It's a government system. Marred by using hostility, fear and intimidation in order to control the population and make them do its bidding. Hey, wait a minute. Sounds like every Western government, doesn't it? Let me ask yourself honestly, given that definition, do you believe that your current system of government is terrorism? Might be. Now, we have a call-in number, ladies and gentlemen, 347-688-9797. 2902. That's 347-688-2902. One more time. If you've got a pen and paper out, let's see how long it takes to actually type this one. 3, like the Trilateral Commission. 4, like the amount of third parties that wound up having a debate that nobody watched, even though it was like the first third party debate in American history in 200 years or whatever. 7, my lucky number. 6, if you've got 3 of them, it's 666, the sign of the devil. 8, for infinity. And there's 8 again, so isn't that infinite? And then 2, like the Twin Towers. And then 9, like 9/11. And then O2, as in oxygen. Liquid O2 that they used to fuel the space shuttles with, alright? So it's 347-688-2902. And if you don't got no money, or if you ain't got no handset, dude, you can ring us up on Skype. I think Freedom Screen. Freedom Screen. It's kind of like something that you put up on your door, a Freedom Screen, and so that when cops try to enter your house, they just can't get through it. They're like, oh, that was bad. And then they go away and buzz off and try and bug somebody else. That'd be cool. Imagine a Freedom Screen. It'd be like one of those electric bug zappers that you have out on your porch that attracts cops in, and they go, oh, it's so beautiful. Taser. It'd be hilarious. Shoot, I should invent something like that. I've got some dudes who know how to, okay. No. The pig zapper. How about that? You know, put them outside on your patio or something like that if you're a drug dealer, you know, just to zap the cops if they come any frickin' when they. What was I talking about? Oh, yes. I don't know how to take the callers or anything like that. I presume the producer will let me know something if that does happen. But I also was thinking about I got Ravana 9000. We can bring in the call if they're actually online. We've just popped them in. The radio field, as with any form of media, and I wanted to kind of give people some sort of preface on this, because a lot of people want to get into it, and a lot of people go into it with an open heart and an open mind. Let me assure you, this is a very dark world in conspiracy talk radio. Very, very few can handle it. I had a co-host for first 7 months of my show, couldn't handle it. Right, he had to quit. He had to do something else. And there's so many people out there who start and then fall. Okay, and it's pretty simple. Are you willing to die? If you're willing to give your life, then no amount of radio show hosting, no amount of YouTube videos, no amount of threats or intimidation or abusive emails can stop you. Only death can. This, maybe it seems a bit harsh for me to say this, but this is the level of commitment I expect. And it's not like you got much of a choice, is it? Are you working for a living? Yeah. Are all those jobs drying up? Yeah. Then what are you going to do for a living when there's no jobs to work for a living? You're going to die. You're going to get exterminated. You get rounded up and force vaccinated and cooked in an oven. You're going to die anyway. You're going to have your job and your children taken or enslaved anyway. You don't really have anything to lose that they haven't already concocted schemes and apparatus to steal from you. You're backed into a corner. You get depressed. Don't get depressed. Get angry. At least anger produces motivation. Motivation, taking action, is something we all must strive for to achieve. Your life depends, and also the life of your forebears, depends upon you right now. Okay, it's about taking personal responsibility. If you're capable of doing that, then you should be able to accomplish something worth doing. If it's worth doing, it's worth doing well, as the saying goes. So if you want to get into this, and I want you to think about it real, real hard. Or, don't think at all. That's what you got to do, man. You're either the kind of person who's going to jump in, sink or swim, and just go, at least I tried, and I may have failed, but it gives me some valuable experience, and I'll go on to do something else. Or, you're somebody who plans. I don't believe in plans. Plans have never seemed to work for me in a lot of ways. Synchronicity, on the other hand, meaningful coincidence. You know, every time I've wanted food or gas money or a computer or clothing or anything, every time I've wanted it, but I've been unable to afford it, somebody just comes along and gives it to me. It's extraordinary. And I put that down to the fact that I'm no longer swimming against the current of the universe. I'm doing what I was meant to do, what I was born to do, what I was destined to do, to lead, to listen, to help, to expose scumbaggery, all of its portents and fashions. Expose it, because there's not much choice in the matter. There's a deadly, repetitive cycle that happens consistently inside your own mind, where people will be so down on themselves, doubt themselves so much, that they talk themselves out of doing anything at all. And then it constantly reinforces itself. It's like complaining about being overweight and sitting on a couch being depressed about it, eating corn chips, and by the end of the year, you're even more fat. You've got to take some action. Take some personal responsibility. Man, this stuff is hard to do. It's real hard, but wouldn't be doing anything else. I mean, you're living like a leaf on the wind. Wherever the wind blows you, that's where you go. It's like going with the flow. And remarkably, it works. So powerful is this system of coincidence that I haven't ever had trouble finding a parking space since. I've never gone hungry. I've never not partied when I needed to blow off some steam. I've never been alone when I wish to be accompanied. None of it. It's as if everything in my life was simply being held back because I was trying to fulfill somebody else's idea. I was trying to fulfill maybe the corporate ideal. It's a strong salesman. I could be making 50 grand a month at the moment if I really wanted to. You know, give me an expensive enough product to sell with a high enough commission value. I'll sell it and make a heck of a lot of money. But ultimately, that stuff is behind me. Okay, I've hung up my guns and I don't want to sell things. I don't. Just the thought of it takes me back to all of that. And I was the only honest one with a conscience working at the whole freaking company, it felt, at times. That ability to convince people of things, to manipulate them. And manipulation's ambiguous. It's not like I could manipulate a pencil into writing a screenplay, or I could manipulate a young girl into having sexual relations with me. Okay? Two entirely different forms of manipulation. One positive, one negative. Manipulation is simply the influence and influencing, right? And let's say you positively influence somebody. Let's say if every single product I sold to somebody as a salesperson, in fact, benefited their lives, saved them money, and made them happier. Is there anything inherently wrong that they were manipulated into it if it was really good for them? And so it's a moral turpitude question. This is why I can't do it anymore, because I didn't like that turpitude. I didn't like the ability that even though I had the best of intentions and I was doing something really good for people, that I still had the ability to know what they were going to say and think before they said or thought it, and use that to convince them, to pull them over to my side. And incidentally, I wound up getting paid for it. Technically, I did nothing wrong. Technically, I told no lies. And technically, I was doing a good service. But I felt that there was an inherent possibility of corruption within me as a result of doing all of that. Responsibility comes with power, not the other way around. When you take enormous responsibilities on, people suddenly look up and go, oh my God, this guy's incredibly responsible. Let's see what he can do with this extra power. That's the way it's really supposed to be working. And I had this feeling, of course, at the time, that my career path in life was kind of dithering, you know, like I felt sort of rudderless. And I had this feeling that I had to get out of this. Otherwise I was simply going to get so depressed and crazy that I would freaking kill myself. Right? A friend of mine is a guitarist, really good guitarist. And he's taking, medications because he's depressed. And I said to him, bro, would you still be depressed? Would you still need those pills if instead of playing your guitar on the street busking for a few dollars or something like that, you had 10,000 screaming fans in front of you? Would you still need those pills? Would you still be depressed? I said, well, no. I say, it's not a freaking chemical imbalance, mate. You're not who you are supposed to be. You're not doing what you are supposed to do, and your body is telling you to get out of the situation you're in as quickly as possible if you want to feel better, right? Now, we have somebody on the line here. We have Timothy.
Yes, Vinny. Can you hear me,
man?
Okay.
Yep, coming through loud and clear.
Okay. Yes, Vinny. Actually, I'm a big fan of yours. I catch you two, three times a week. You're one of those guys I watch and I listen to. Just to let you know right off, I kind of know your mindset. I'm a pretty big fan. And I wanted to just ask you a couple of questions, if that's okay.
Just a second. Let me explain that Hijacker is one of our hosts here in the station.
Okay. So if you want to ask me some questions,
well, that's okay. That's all right. You know, that's not important. Yeah. No, you're taking a look at the way the world is set up right now, and I just wanted to ask you, can you give me what you think is going to happen here in the next 3 to 4 months with this election coming up? I mean, how do you game what's about to happen? How do you game it out? Like, let's just say from here till January when one of the others sworn in for a second term or first term. I mean, how do you see this world and your worldview about how you think things are going to unfold, pretty much?
Okay. Well, first of all, I don't like making predictions, and I don't like looking towards the future, because I've got too much going on in front of me right now. There's only one moment you need, really need to worry about, and it's not a moment that's 3 months from now or December 21st, 2012 or whatever. It's actually this moment, right here, right now. And honestly, it's the only one you'll actually ever experience. You'll never experience the future because by the time you get there, it's not the future. It's the present moment, isn't it? So what I'm cognizant of about the U.S. elections, okay, dig this. Every single time you have an election, do you ever elect a president that actually solves any problems? No. So are there any reason to suspect that Romney or Obama will solve any problems? No. Has every single president wound up causing more problems than they're worth after, directly after being elected? Yes. Is the New World Order in control of said politicians? Yes. So, that said, does it even frickin' matter? At all? What's happening with the US elections? What's happening in the future? Or is it truly the only thing that really matters is what you are doing right here, right now, to ensure that your fellow Americans are not killed, enslaved, or impoverished by scumbaggery? Are you helping people to get out of their IRS taxes? Are you helping people to create entrepreneurial businesses? Are you helping people to grow their own food? Are you helping people to move into their first home? Are you helping people to repair their car? If you're a butcher, a baker, a candlestick maker, you can defeat the New World Order. But you must focus on your particular area of expertise. When you talk about the future, here's the couple of things that other people have said, is that we're heading for hyperinflation in the United States. The Federal Reserve gave $40 billion a month to buy mortgage-backed securities. Okay, now let me explain what a mortgage-backed security is. Mort, meaning mortality, gauge, meaning grip, security, meaning tyranny. So, they are buying death grip tyranny. Okay? Simple as that. Which means they're going to own all the real estate. The Fed, private bankers, will own all the real estate in America. So they'll buy your house off you that foreclosed on it, you'll lose all your money, and you'll go bankrupt, and then they'll rent that house back to you. Then they're going to take that $40 billion per month, and then they're going to put it into derivatives, and they're going to expand it. They're going to call $1 $40 and then gamble it on the stock market at 1,000 to 1 and create an even more enormous debt bubble than we've already got already. There's more debt out there than the world is currently worth. And I spoke with Lord Frederick here in New Zealand. He's only just been named a Lord. I'm just giving him some fun. But he's got the business acumen. And you know what he does every time you go into a business that's like monstrously in debt and about to collapse? You forgive all debts. No creditors, no debtors, no nothing. Just let's just clear the boards. Gives everybody some breathing room. It's like, oh, you cut your losses. And this is something that needs to happen, I believe, in the United States, but it won't, is that you take all this made-up debt. They're simply pretending that this debt exists, right? So why don't we just pretend that it doesn't exist? Debt crisis solved! Is that not a simple solution? Right? So what about this then? You're gonna have hyperinflation. Might lead to civil war. Might lead to war with Iran. Might lead to XYZ. Okay. What are you doing about it? I mean, I know that you, Hijacker, you're a host here on this illustrious network. So you're doing something. You're not doing nothing, are you? However, you can't just do something about it. Also, you've got to shed your fear of it, as I say. It's like Faith. POW camps in Vietnam produce some very interesting survival statistics. Those who were atheists or had little to no belief in God died in the prisoner of war camps. Those who had strong faith in God survived. Isn't that interesting? Because when you're locked away, no hope of rescue, no hope of freedom, and you got no faith in anything, you really are all alone in that room, aren't you? I choose to have faith in myself, and I choose to have faith in those around me. So it matters not what happens to me. It matters not how horrific the financial crisis might get. I will still be out there fighting to, protect human life. I think that's ultimately the highest calling anybody can really have, is to protect human life from those who would wish to destroy it or enslave it or corral it. And when you look at the future, you're talking about up through to February, January, right? Does it even matter, you know? You just take what's happening right now and multiply. Everything's getting better and worse at the same time. I've looked at it like this. You got two cars, okay? They're on a racetrack. One's positioned halfway up the racetrack, but his speed limit is 50 kilometers an hour. And the truth movement is right at the fracking beginning of the racetrack, but we're going to go 100 miles an hour. Who's going to reach the finish line first? You know?
Vinny, also, I wanted to talk to you about something else. Because you're in this business. You are a rock star among the alternative talk show hosts. I mean, you are you're one of the big guns, along with like Jack Blood, Sean David Morton. I mean, you're up there. You're
and I've only been doing it 2 years. These guys have been doing it 20.
Well, I know, but you're quick. You're quick, Vinny. You got a quick mind. I mean, you can break things apart pretty simple, and you got that passionate frequency to your voice and your worldview. So you've been doing this 2 years. What I'm noticing. And, you know, I go to a lot, I check out a lot of different sites because I'm a host of my little show. I want to see what other people are saying or some information I miss. I steal from you guys all the time, basically. If I got a lot of stuff from you that I've ended up on an index card, where I've incorporated in my show. So I'm kind of a bottom feeder, so to speak. But, just noticed, all of these different alternative talk radio stations, there's a couple of dozen of them that are kind of up there, and I noticed each one seems to have their stars, so to speak. Like you're a star over on the network where I listen to you 2-3 days a week, maybe 4 days a week, or sometimes I'll just hit you 15 minutes, the first 15, try to find out what's in your head. But what I notice, what is chronic, and it's chronic throughout the whole truther, conspiracy, industry, alternative talk, radio stations, and it's chronic poverty, money. And I just wonder, why does every single station and every single host of your caliber and all the way, the people all the way down, there's people like me who don't even think about the money. I'm not even doing it for that. But the people that really put it on the line, why is there such a problem with getting support and money? I started to notice all these different stations. That's a universal problem. Everybody's always struggling to make, you know, to get that dollar to pay the bill, to pay the electric bill, or for Nighthawks station to basically buy the bandwidth. And I thought, all these different stations, they seem to have two or three stars, rock stars, so to speak, that carry the rest of the station. In our station, we got Kerry Cassidy, Sean David Morton, and one or two others. But I thought, What would happen if all of you stars, so to speak, rock stars in the different radio stations were to concentrate your firepower onto one station, which would automatically make it go with the biggest and the best? I mean, if you were to get people of your caliber, Chris Green, you know the whole group out there, Sean David Moore, you know the whole group. I don't want to go through all these different names.
Well, the thing is, you're mentioning most of these shows, and they're already all together on American Freedom Radio. So the thing that you expect and hope would happen is happening, yet it's not enough. Now, if you want to make money telling lies, you can. If you want to make money telling the truth, you can't. It's just that simple. The world is not structured in an economic fashion to allow those who are intelligent, truthful, and conscientious to also become very powerful and use their truth and use that power to help others. The economic structure is fashioned in precisely this way for a very specific reason: to prevent any competition. All right, the New World Order doesn't want competitive people coming in there. But on the other side of things, Alex Jones is right. You've got to be calling up, asking for money, doing money bombs, asking for sponsorship, doing all this. You know why all these people are frickin' broke? Because they're not asking for money. They don't ask, they don't get. And then they complain that, oh, it's so hard because I never even try to get any money and ergo I don't have any. I mean, come on. Me, I'm working all the time to get money. Not because I love the money, but because I can get a new computer with it and I can expose even more scumbaggery. That's what I'm talking about. Ladies and gentlemen, we're coming to break. We'll be right back on the Siobhan Side Reset Show on freedomslips.com. We'll be coming back with Ravana, I think, another host. And so I wanted to address more of this question from
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio. We'll be right back at a break, so stay tuned.
Things were not quite right, that everything was just ever so slightly askew.
Do you have, to paraphrase Morpheus, a splinter in your mind?
If you're interested in hearing the latest information about UFOs, the paranormal,
ancient cultures and structures,
monatomic elements,
longevity,
fantastic discoveries in science,
download it to your brain,
then tune in to us. Hi, I'm Dave.
And I'm Mackie.
And we are Shiny Side Out, Sundays 2 to 4 a.m. Eastern. See you then.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
I invite you to join me Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern for Remembering with Pamela. We will be talking about each part of self, what each is, and how we need to be whole to navigate through this exciting time and changing space. Remembering with Pamela, Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern.
Revolution Radio.
FreedomSlips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here. That's Remembering with Pamela, Tuesday afternoons at 2 p.m. Eastern.
Imagine no longer being tied down to your computer, but having the freedom to take live talk radio with you anywhere you go. TalkStream Live introduces our first ever iPhone application. The talk shows you follow now follow you, and your iPhone is now the fastest and easiest way to stay connected to the best talk radio on the internet. Let TalkStream Live transform the way you listen to radio. Listen to live talk shows 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Mobile talk radio from TalkStream Live. Now available in the iTunes App Store.
anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of
be
more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard. You've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look.
It's a flesh wound.
I don't believe I'm in such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, and stupidity.
I'll do you for that. What? Come here. What are you going to do, bleed on me? I'm invincible.
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs.
Roundtable Live, Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.
Please join us every Saturday night for our show, Everything Psychic, at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where we will be taking listener callers and doing live psychic readings on the air at Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Please visit my website at www.thereadersgroup.com for more info, and we look forward to seeing you then.
Hello all, thanks for tuning in to Revolution Radio. We are the number one public access commercial-free internet talk radio station on the web, with between 12 and 16 hours of live programming per day, bringing you news, politics, entertainment, and just plain human interactive talks with our extremely informative and successful nightly open caller roundtables. And how do we do this? Through the support of volunteers and donations from good listeners like you. So if you're digging what you hear, and we are bringing you an entertaining and informative service, please visit our site support page and donate to the cause. Keep us live, keep us kicking, help us bring you the talk. We are already here. Help keep us here. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. Revolution Radio! Thanks for listening while we take that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Siobhan Cy Reese kind of show. I'm Vinnie Eastwood from the VinnieEastwoodShow.com filling in for her today. And we have a guest who's known by one name, like Madonna. It's Ravonna. Welcome, mate.
Hey, how's it going, Vinny?
I'm good, bro. I'm good. And we're also joined by Hijacker, too. And I wanted to address your question about this, you know, why is everybody broke? And, you know, as I mentioned, it's because they're not going out and seeking money. It's about commoditizing and monetizing. Right, so let's look at it like this. A lot of people have a moral objection to trying to make money. Okay, they've got moral objections. Okay, I'm going out here, I'm doing for the truth, I'm against the Federal Reserve, ergo making money is a bad, bad thing. And then they wind up going broke and stopping doing their activism altogether because they didn't ask for any money. Okay, it's stupid, in my opinion. And it's not like you go out there being money grubbing or anything like that. You're just going out and ensuring that you can survive and grow and expand and do more good. Okay? Money is simply energy condensed to a financial vibration, if you will, as Bill Hicks might say. And if you've got some, you've got power, like an energy ball or whatever. And you can use that energy ball to throw it at David Rockefeller and melt his face off if you want to. Whatever.
Well, the thing is money is just what you use to get what you need to continue doing what you're doing. I mean, you can barter or you can use money. You can use silver, you can use gold, you can use whatever. It's just money. Everybody knows that I can go and spend it at the store. So, yeah, I'll accept it from this guy and that guy and whoever. But, yeah, like you said, I mean, the reason that we're all broke is we don't go and hunt after the money because we just, for whatever reason, we have an aversion to going after that side of things. I mean, I'm broke as hell all the time. But it's not like I'm not trying to make some money here and there. It's just where I'm at, nobody has any. I mean, that's a big part of it.
Yeah, we were talking with I was out late at night. And by the way, if people have noticed a difference in my tone or slowness today, this is what happens when you're up real late and you're totally unprepared for a show that's on relatively early in the day. On the other hand, seem that this is not that hard. It's pretty easy because I do it every day. I've made 11 different DVDs. Okay. 11 different DVDs. Designed the DVDs, the titles, the packaging, and all of that kind of stuff. Got them printed. Cost about maybe $3 per DVD to print. And then you go to activist meetups, protests, public meetings with a little stand with all these different DVDs that I've done on fluoride, vitamin C, pesticides, local government corruption and Agenda 21, and compilation DVDs with all manner of stuff, global warming, 9/11, 1080, you know, cannabis, whatever. I've got a broad range of subjects that I cover. So when you go to any activist meetup, you say to people, look, this DVD cost me about $5 to produce. You can have it for $5, but I'm asking you for 20. Few people will give you 20. Some won't give you 10. But a lot of them will take 5. Okay? So what you're doing is you're turning your work into a commodity. That is something that I believe people should be really striving for, is you've got to actually create products that address certain things. Find a niche and fill it, right? If you're a baker and you realized nobody is making peanut butter jam twisty rolls. Nobody. People are making Marmite and cheese twisty rolls, but no peanut butter and jam twisty rolls. So I'm going to hook that Shiite Muslim up, and I'm going to make a little bit of money off of this little creative exercise here. Okay, I'm going to create a product out of it, and people go, that tastes really good. I think I might deep fry it as well. Uh-huh. So all I'm talking about here is people got to understand the inherent value of themselves and their labor. Even communists believe this, that work is the source of all wealth. Okay? Here's how you tell whether or not you're making money for the right reasons. I believe there is such a thing as making money for the right reasons. As a result of you making your money and your entire apparatus, have you hurt anybody? No. Have you damaged anybody's property or life? No. Have you conversely informed people about something that they wouldn't ordinarily know? Yes. Have you improved their life in a way that they ordinarily wouldn't have had it improved? Yes. Okay, you've got those four factors in there. You're making money for the right reasons. You're going out there and you're
more. Add one more, and that would be the distraction industry, like the Lady Gaga and football players and, you know, baseball. Yeah. The circus.
Okay, yeah. Do those people help and inform and enrich people's lives? No, so they don't fall into the first they don't fall into the first four categories of whether you do harm and whether you do good. They don't do good, even though they may not do harm. And I think you have to tick all those boxes before you can determine whether or not you're making money for the right reasons. And also, on the other hand, you can also have a look at subliminal harm being caused by these people, occult ritual practices, dancing around on stage in a costume made of meat, right? Rotting animal flesh, as Lady Gaga actually wore one time on stage. And you gotta wonder, the brain has no firewall. Okay, let me just do an experiment. Gentlemen listening, there will be an image associated with the word I'm saying, and you will produce an instant intellectual reaction, and I want you to try and resist thinking about this and having a reaction to it. Here it is.
Boobies.
Ah, see? I'm looking at Ravada's face, and he has a big grin on his face. That's what happens when a man thinks about boobies. And you cannot not think about boobies if the image or thought process of boobies is put in front of your face, okay? That is how little protection the mind has. Even to think about it produces an image. To see it produces a subliminal effect. It goes straight back into it. And sometimes the mind's not even conscious of what it's seeing. You have a look at, say, Disney movies. There is a lot of penis in Disney movies. I Shiite Muslim you not. You have a look at the... Anybody Google The Little Mermaid. Okay? And you have a look at The Little Mermaid kind of title, the design, the palace, and the palace has a phallus, right? There are penis-shaped objects in that palace, and your brain sees those even though you don't even notice that they're even there, and it comes back into you. So when you're talking about the entertainment industry, Lady Gaga and all of these other things, you also have to understand about the direct subliminal intellectual correlations between these rituals and symbols and things that they're putting in front of people. So, you know, you again, like I say, got to tick all the boxes. And we've got another person added in here, just in time. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Benny. How are you doing?
Somewhat fabulous is my standard party line.
It's a pleasure to talk to you. I wanted to call you up and compliment you on that last answer you gave. And I, you know, as simple as it is, I think that makes more sense than anything. A lot of times I wonder if there's even such a thing as a present, because what's present right now is past. And I find, and I question a lot of the online audience, you know, is worrying, or should I say, talking so much about what might happen in the future, does that really make any difference? I mean, enjoy life right now. Your life could end in 5 minutes. It could end tomorrow. Why worry about something that could be, that nobody has any proof of or any documented fact on?
Hold on. It's a question about what has more effect, doing something in the present or worrying about something in the future.
Doing something in the present.
It's pretty freaking obvious, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
All right, but the problem is we're totally, totally trapped in this fear paradigm, man. It's like in The Matrix. You're born into a prison that you cannot smell or see or taste or touch, a prison for your mind. And the fear paradigm is all around us. Be afraid of vaccines. Be afraid of global warming. Be afraid of war. Be afraid of genocide. Be afraid of your government. Be afraid of your council. This goes for the alternative movement as well as the mainstream media, doesn't it? We're all being told to be afraid from both sides. And it's hard to escape that, I've found.
The thing that scares me is do-gooders the people that want to save everyone else, and I don't want to say stupid people, but people who are willfully ignorant. People who just simply do not want to know the truth. That's what scares me.
I have a t-shirt that I wear to big music concerts, usually. It says, never underestimate the power of stupid people in large groups. And I like what you said about do-gooders, because I consider myself to be the bad guy. I may be the good guy in other people's eyes, but I want people to know that I consider myself to be a bad guy. Okay, I've got manipulative potential. My father was a very violent person. He was a horrible guy. And I know that I've got all this potential within me to be a corrupt, lying, selfish psycho, basically. However, because I know this, I don't go out being a do-gooder. I go out being the bad guy, attacking other bad guys, essentially. And the way you prevent yourself from becoming corrupt, going out thinking that you're the good guy or whatever, is you surround yourself, as I have, with the top exposers of scumbaggery in the world. Okay? Because if you're surrounded by people that routinely analyze your language, analyze your habits, analyze your content, analyze your thoughts, analyze the words that come out of your very mouth, you won't be able to get away with anything. Ever. And that's my direct intention. And I've said on my show many times, should the day come, heaven forbid, that I turn into some form of douchebag, I would hope that my friends would expose me quickly, succinctly, and unequivocally, so that I could not continue to do damage to the people of the wider truth movement. And for those who refuse to wake up, you make a good point there, Justin, about people who are willfully ignorant. I treat it like triage on the battlefield. You don't waste your morphine and your bandages and your medical supplies trying to save a guy who has been decapitated. He's already dead. Move on to the next person who you can save. Okay? And we're all going to die anyway. So, I mean, it was like when you're born, you've got a frickin' expiration date. You know? So it was like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do, man? You know, you're going to spend your life frickin' trying to save the lives of people who are going to die anyway? Or are you going to try and spend your life living yours, okay? A life well lived. That is what I really wish to have. Essentially, when I die, I want to be able to look back and go, hey, I didn't engage in scumbaggery. I was actually a real good bastard. I indeed helped a lot of people. I produced numerous cackles. And various other people have become happy and or wealthier and or more well off because I decided to take responsibility and try and help them. That's because I only spend time on people who are frickin' worth my time. I only got a limited amount of it. I got a frickin' expiration date here. Somebody comes at me with all capital letter comments on YouTube. Ah, da, 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 da. Block! Talk to them again. It's like popping a pimple, if you will. You know, back in the day, you know, you get this real immense pleasure. Oh, look at that one. And it's gone. And that's kind of what these trolls and all these other willfully ignorant clowns are, basically. However, even with that, there's the concept of propaganda, repetition, repeating something over and over again so that people will believe it. If you're capable of sitting there in a cast iron skillet frying away and wanting to be dumped into the fire, perfectly fine, mate. I'll let you be roasted. However, I'm not going to sit back, see you in the cast iron skillet and say absolutely nothing. I say, hey, mate, the heat's turning up. You're going to get all extra crispy. And you go, no. I say, okay, I tried. Your fault now. Because I passed on the responsibility to him. It's sort of like in a relay, you run your length and then you pass the torch to somebody else. Okay? That's what I think a lot of us should be doing. And also it means within the truth movement itself, there's the elders, okay? And I've had so many, many elder mentors and guests that I've had on my show and just interacted with in my life, and it's like I feel so privileged to be at the comparatively young age of 27 and have already interviewed, let's just go ahead and say it. The majority of the prominent thinkers in the truth movement, okay? At the age of 27, I've done that because I'm doing between 5 and 10 interviews a week, okay? So 2, 3, 4 years or something of that nature. I've interviewed a shockingly large amount of important thinkers. And something that occurs to me when you're dealing with ignorant people rather than people who you're trying to learn off or whatever, you don't put yourself in the line of fire. Okay, information is like a grenade. It's best to pull the pin, roll it in there, and then walk out of the room. Okay, it's just like, you know, you're having tea with your mother or something like that, and she's previously called you a conspiracy theorist or anything like that, and you know, you're just drinking a nice hot cuppa, and she starts talking about how they've got these naked body scanners in the airports to help protect you from these deadly terrorists. And they go, oh, yeah. And Adeline was an inside job. You know, and just there's these little subliminal things you can do. If somebody's not willing to engage in a conversation on a rational basis, you can just say one thing and then drop it, just quickly, okay? And then change the subject. Or more to the point, like a joke. Something that's just completely kind of, it's like distracting children. Okay, if your child falls down, they hurt themselves, they start crying. Ah! Oh, look at this, what's that? And they forget that they're hurt. It's great, you know, you're just going to distract people. And the reason, it's interesting, I've been really getting into the whole idea of child rearing. Maybe I'm getting a bit clucky, but. In many ways, the general population are like children, aren't they? Educated to the level of a 5-year-old. And so you can't engage in an adult conversation with them. And if you tell them something that scares the living Shiite Muslim out of them, if you don't make them laugh directly afterwards, then the trauma and the pain that comes at them from that knowledge that does exist, it wasn't your fault, but you're the one who told them about it, and so the mind correlates the person telling them the bad thing with the person doing the bad thing, so you become their enemy. So if you don't make them laugh, they're now your enemy. If you do, they're now your ally. Or at least that's how my methodology is coming forth anyway, so yeah.
It's kind of like walking in on your little brother and saying, hey, you know what? Mom and Dad bought all the presents. There really is no Santa Claus when he's like 5 or 6, 7 in that range. And he loses his mind. He doesn't know what to do because, oh, my God, there's no Santa Claus? I've been waiting all year for Santa Claus. There's no Santa Claus? What? That's what it's like for these people. And, I mean, I don't mean to put the average person down, but, I mean, just look at what the media is putting out for them. You know, the New York Times used to be written at the turn of the century, the 19th century, at a 17th grade level. The last time I checked, it was written for a 5th grader. I mean, I went and looked up what an 8th grade final exam was back in the 40s. I couldn't pass it. I didn't know the answers to half of the questions on there. And it's a combination of, you know, what they feed us through the media and the schooling. They're just not meant to know. They don't want us to know. And because we don't know that it's out there, we don't go to look for it. Unless you're like one of us here.
Yeah, and this brings me to another important point. Has anybody actually claimed to wake anybody up? No? No, why?
I have actually had a couple of people that have, not that I was the total cause, but yeah, I mean, basically coming over and saying, you know, hey, listen to this, Glenn Beck spiel for 10 minutes on what he's got to say on this, or listen to this Alex Jones spiel. You know, you pick and choose a few good ones here and there, and then people are like, oh my God, really? And then they start doing some research. And I've had people that have actually woken up that way. I can't take all the credit though.
Now, that was my point, is that you or me physically can't wake somebody up. I mean, what are we going to do? Turn into some metaphysical being and massage each individual synapse to stop being a frickin' slave? You can't physically do it, mate. However, as I mentioned before, you plant a seed, and sometimes the seed takes root, and those people start doing their own research, i.e. taking responsibility for informing themselves. I believe that is what waking up actually is taking personal responsibility for your own mind.
Well, and I think that's a big difference between the fact if you're informing someone or you're spreading fear out there. We used to be able to trust this online community, and now the online audience has become so, it seems like many of us out there are creating these ghosts, and then we go chasing the same ghost, and maybe somebody that just came on for the first time listening is just chasing that same ghost, and they're not actually researching or looking for information.
Discernment, I found, is one of the interesting elements. The first thing you learn is that everything's a lie, and the second thing you learn is to figure out how you can figure out what's actually true, right? And that process does not stop. I mean, until deception in and of itself ends, there will still be a need for discernment, there will still be a need for listening, and there will still be a need for argument. And what I don't get is people wish for the truth movement to come together. I believe that would be the worst thing that would ever happen to the truth movement.
Agreed.
Okay? Everybody wants it to come together. Look, mate, if we're all come together, that sounds all nice and lovey-dovey, but think about what happened when the mainstream media came together during the Military Commissions Act in the early 90s, when the American media apparatus went from 800 companies to today, 4 companies. If you centralize or amalgamate or get everybody in the same space, you are producing a funnel of information that prevents discernment because people trust that source. Okay? How many times have you listened to a radio show host say a fact or say something like it's a fact, and then you specifically Google it up, that particular fact, and ascertain via a little bit of research whether or not that fact was accurate or whether or not it was not, okay? Very, very, very rarely would be my answer. Only if it's something of consequence to me, right? And what I found interesting, the whole idea of everybody coming together is about abdicating yourself. I don't like that idea either. Yourself is the most important thing, okay? Other than that, once you become a parent, yourself becomes the second most important thing, and the most important thing becomes your family. Those are the only time when the priority really switches. You have to essentially wade through this incredible swath of information. Like a friend of mine was talking about, oh, I met this young truther yesterday, and he doesn't know everything that's going on. I said, well, hold on a second, are you implying that there is somebody somewhere out there that knows everything that's going on? You're going to be kidding me, bro. They don't exist. They don't exist. Nobody knows everything.
Yeah, think about this. I mean, you get, you know, Conspiracy Con or, you know, these different groups that meet together, and you've got, you know, the one guy and his entire life is dedicated to, you know, aliens from Mars. And you've got this person over here and all they know is the Pleiades and, you know, the Star Children or, you know, whatever. And then you've got the guys that are the Kennedy assassination guys. How can you really get all these guys in one place and get them to agree on much of anything? I mean, there's just so many different topics out there that, I mean, you really couldn't put them all together into one big bushel basket of whatever you want to call it, but, you know, the truth.
Well, I mean,
there's so many different viewpoints out there. How are you going to organize them all, I guess I would say?
See, and again, we attempt to organize, chronicle, and categorize all the things that we see. This is the reason why humans didn't get wiped out by predators back in the day, because they would see grass ruffling and they would correlate the idea that a predator might be approaching. They would hear a growl in the jungle and run up a tree. They'd have instant reactions to these patterns that form in their minds. But now what's happening is that we have a new digital media that has no physical stimuli. It's all information. It's all intellectual. There's nothing real, right? Until you make it real. Somebody told me once that the council meetings were corrupt. I didn't find out that the council meetings were corrupt until I went to a council meeting, quietly sat there prominently with a tripod filming the public meeting, and was thrown out by security guards. You don't know for sure. Unless it happens to you. And I wonder, this is a thought that occurs to me now. You wonder, right, is vaccines bad for me? Let's go get a vaccine. And then all of a sudden you get a debilitating illness and for the rest of your life. And you're like, okay, now I know that vaccines are bad. Now I'm going to go drink some fluoride and see how bad that's for me. And then your IQ gets reduced by a couple of points. You're a little bit dumber. And you can't walk because you've got frickin' chronic fatigue syndrome as a vaccine reaction or something like that. Apparently, chronic fatigue syndrome didn't exist until after the polio vaccine existed. it's like a mutation. Instead of just making you totally paralyzed, it makes your whole body semi-paralyzed permanently. Any medication for it?
Well, okay. And a big thing with the fatigue syndrome thing was after the first Gulf War. And, you know, we were selling Saddam Hussein all kinds of chemical weapons, and he was buying anything he could get. He had stuff from World War One, World War Two. I was in the military. I had friends that had to go rig explosives in those bunkers, El Muthana and Kamisaya weapons depots, and they weren't told there was chemical weapons in there. So they're walking through no gas mask, no mop suit, no boots, through, you know, sarin, taboon, all kinds of crazy stuff. And then when they blew it up, the column of debris and smoke was 150 or 250 miles wide and went for like 1,500 miles.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, absolutely ridiculous. It contaminated everything over there. And on top of all that, they have all the DU. I mean, and that's just a ridiculously dangerous thing in itself, too. So
I'm done. Now, my point here is we've got to figure out what these problems are and what's actually real, sort the facts from fiction, without even actually having it happen to us. And that's the problem with most activists. They don't become activists until something happens to them, in general. It's trauma that wakes you up. And I got a joke here as well. We're talking about depleted chemical weapons and all of that kind of stuff. I was just thinking, you know how a lot of cultures and stuff like that, they develop their own militaries to protect their interests. I was wondering, you know, here's a joke for you. What do the New Ages use to make their weaponry? Pleiades uranium. That's terrible. Hey, and also, It was How Did New Agers Make Their Weaponry? With Pleiades Uranium. And there was also another one, an Iraqi joke that I came up with. What do Iraqi men give their wife on Valentine's Day? Depleted geraniums. Because geraniums are a type of flower, you see?
That's good. That's good. I like that one.
Yeah.
That was good.
And I believe Hijacker has some notes that he wants to get in here.
Yeah, no, I've been taking notes. You know, just on the willfully ignorant, the one thing you need to think about is it is because those people are willfully ignorant and you can't wake them up. Those are the actual people that are actually protecting us. Because when the government takes a look and they see how many stupid people that are willfully ignorant and will not wake up, we're like a fly on the backside of an elephant. You can say whatever you want. You can have your shows. You can talk to. You're blue in the face. We're not scared of you at all because we know that 95% of the people are not able to wake up. So in a sense...
Ironically,
yeah,
throughout history, it's only taken about 3% of the population to be involved and dedicated to overthrow a tyrannical government that's enslaving 100% of the people.
Well, that was true back in 1776. People think that it's only going to take 3%.
People were much brighter back. People were much more intelligent back then. Somebody mentioned about taking a test from the 40s, right? I had a look at and that was for a eighth grader test or something like that, or a fifth grader test or whatever. Okay, we had a third grader test from, I think it was 1800-ish, right? Not a single person that I knew could answer even one of any of those questions correctly. Nobody! We've been dumbed down so ridiculously, it's unbelievable! However, never underestimate stupid people. Believe me, even though I'm dumb by comparison to people who were living 100 years ago and got educated in a system that actually valued education, and today I've got new technology and stuff like that. Like, let's say, for example, you're fighting a war. One guy's got really, really smart, but another guy's got a gun. Who's going to win the war? The guy with the gun's going to shoot him, and he's going to blow his smart brains all over a tree behind him. It's wrecked. It doesn't matter how smart or dumb you are. If you are savvy, streetwise, as it were, you can mess with these mofos and do it hardcore too. Because ultimately, we ain't got anything left to lose. And I believe that's one of the reasons why the Vietnamese won the Vietnam War. Is that they only had two options for victory. Victory itself or a body bag. And that was it. It's like, I'm either going to win or I'm going to die. I'm not going to...
That's pretty much... Yep. Yep. Absolutely.
Do we all have that level of commitment? And when does that commitment get tested? When do we have a gun to our head saying, stop doing your radio show, or I'm going to pull this trigger? That's a test that I don't think any of us have ever really had, is it?
Well, they don't do it like that, Vinny. They do it other ways. There's other ways.
Namely convincing yourself to say, I don't have enough power, I'm too small, I can't make a difference. And so they stop you from actually making a difference.
Well, you know, I mean, Vinny, do you have children?
Not yet.
Well, you're going to find out. As soon as you get a child, you're going to realize that the government has got a hostage. And they can make you do things that you think you... Right now, you're single, and you don't have any children.
I'm not single.
Well, I mean, you don't have any children. Mm. Once you have a child, the government's got a hostage. That's the way that works. Trust me.
Yeah.
Have
you heard of Chopper Reed? He's an Australian gang member, hitman. And He said, mate, I was absolutely 10 foot tall, bulletproof. I could kill anybody and get away with it. There was nothing they could do to me or anything. But when my son was born, for the first time in my life, I knew love. And for the first time in my life, I knew that now they could hurt me. Because I never cared about what happened to me.
Right.
But.
Yeah, no, I was just
child,
saying,
you know.
Yeah, on the willfully ignorant, you know, right now, if you think about what's happening in New York, all of those people who are not prepared, who are not woke up. I mean, that's like a mass of people, millions of people. Then we're behind them. And one of the things that the reason we can still operate is that before they get to us, they got to process these millions of people. Right now, they're just looking to get water and food. So before they really start to bust this whole world down and really go to hard martial law or to really enslave us, they got to deal with the ignorant masses first. I mean, just take a look at New York. Absolutely unbelievable.
But just and here's another back to the fact of... I'm sorry.
Let me just throw this in there. Speaking about New York, the Red Cross has been getting slammed because they have cookies and hot chocolate for people, not actual food, blankets, clothes, things that would actually be needed. They have cookies and hot chocolate. So, I mean, the stupidity goes...
Hold on a second. They're doing storm relief. What kind of cookies? Let me guess. Chips Ahoy?
I don't know. Probably Oreos, maybe.
Yeah, right. But listen, the reason why I really called, Vinny, is it was two points I really wanted to make with you. And one, it was the what I started off with about the money question and really the next evolution of talk radio. I mean, right now, you have we can't take it away from him. The fact of the matter is he is basically king, and that's Alex Jones and his operation. He affects millions of more people than the next closest station or host. And so I'm just what I was saying is the next evolution may be like what they've done at GCN, where they line up a multiple cast of characters or you know, basically stars within this the truth or conspiracy industry movement, whatever you want to call it. So
there's a problem with that. All the people in the conspiracy truth or movement who are big radio show hosts, they hate each other.
Oh, really?
Believe me, man.
Yeah, I know.
Believe me. I have talked behind the scenes with so many huge hosts, guests, and they all hate particular other hosts, particular other guests. And it's an endless soiree. Human beings are small social creatures by nature. We only really want to have a couple of people around us that we trust and enjoy and that enrich our lives. You try to bring too many people together with too many individual ideas, it's too many chiefs, not enough Indians, and it'll just break apart and be destroyed. Every single major network that you'll have a look at nowadays, you have a look behind the scenes, you talk to the producers, you talk to the network owners, and you will see them rushing around, putting out fires, not because the New World Order is attacking them, but because the people on their network are attacking each other.
Oh, Vinny, I'm telling you, this is a suicide moment for me. I mean, I don't even know what to say with that. It's like all I could do is, I guess, laugh at it. Who would have known? Who would have known?
See, my bag about all of this is my attitude is very remarkably different. I believe that collaboration is when I cut my ego in half and you cut your ego in half. And we combine what's left together and both of us grow and become something much larger and grander than we could be individually, right? That's what collaboration really is. Do you know how many hosts there are that invite other radio show hosts from competing networks of varying sizes onto their radio shows on a regular basis?
Well, I know what just happened with Sean David Morton over, I think it was your place.
American Freedom Radio, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just because he was doing a show over here. I don't know what really is going on, but that, I don't understand stuff like that. But it looks go ahead.
I've been privy to a lot of the backstory on this. Being a host at American Freedom Radio, I've been talked to and been shared some information.
It's 50,
I'm not 50, sure how much. I'm not sure how much of it I can say is right, the problem.
Would you
it's because I'd be repeating private conversations.
Right.
But
Vinny,
go ahead.
Vinny, would you say that it's 50-50 the station's fault and 50-50 Sean's fault? If you had to break it down, is it one of those kind of deals? Is it a wash?
You're putting
it's
me
all
a
in the
real,
past.
You know,
who really cares? That's the whole thing. You know, he was bringing up about the people in New York, and that backs it up.
No,
you
I wanted
think
to.
The people in New York really care about the future?
I'm talking
Marco
about talk radio stations.
Or do you Justin. Think they care about the present right now? What's
no, Justin, I'm talking about a problem. The problem, the chronic money problem, the chronic problem getting the word out, the chronic problem that the stations have. Next evolution, and Vinny just gave me a couple of key points. Number one, they all seem to hate each other. And number two, you've got a situation that just happened. Why does that situation happen with Sean David Morton and American Freedom Radio?
What difference does it make?
Because
it makes a difference because so many people come into the Truth Movement, into talk radio show, thinking that everybody's all holding hands and singing frickin' Kumbaya. And the situation, the reality, is intensely opposite to that. There is so much infighting, so much back chatter, things like this that I've been privy to that I do not share on the radio waves. I don't want to burn bridges by criticizing Sean David Morton or American Freedom Radio or take sides in that matter. What
yeah,
I
sure,
do instead, usually, is I will bring on those people who are having troubles with each other, and they will talk to me about the other person, and then I'll bring that other person on, and they'll talk to me about that other person, okay? And then I gain something that very few people get, perspective, from which you can talk with both sides of the information that exists on an argument and make your own discernment.
Right.
My discernment on this is that Danny Romero used to produce Alex Jones. He had advertisers stolen by him, which he admitted, and a number of other really horrific things. And Aaron Russo, who died not too long ago, when he was dying of cancer, called Danny Romero into his room and confessed to him that out of all the people in the Truth Movement that he knew, Danny Romero of AmericanFreedomRadio.com was the only person who actually stayed true to the cause. I was offered a job, radio spot, by both Oracle and Republic Broadcast Network in the same week. And Danny Romero told me that if I take any of those positions, he will cancel my show on American Freedom Radio because he doesn't like people going on competing networks. What did Sean David Morton do a couple of weeks before he lost his show on American Freedom Radio? He started up another show on a competing network. Clap, sealed.
Yeah, but I mean,
that's
this is
the reason why. Competition. Radio networks are competing for audience. They're competing for airtime. They're competing for advertising dollars. If they spread their show hosts out, that means they lose their exclusivity, they lose their market draw. It's a business thing, okay? And it's also a loyalty thing. The best radio show hosts, allegedly, have one show on one network that they do incredibly well, and maybe they appear in guests on other shows and maybe do a few other different projects as well. But in terms of doing a radio show, you do one, and you be professional at it, and you do the best dang radio show that you can. That was the advice Danny gave to me when RBN and Orion offered me a slot. And I had to turn him down not necessarily because I was following Danny's advice, but more is because I didn't really have a whole lot of choice in the matter, really, did I? Because I love American Freedom Radio, bro. I mean, seriously. You ever look at the list of freaking hosts that they've got? It's like, whoa! These are like the Jason Burmeses and the Webster Tarpleys of their time starting off sort of thing. Danny's got this capacity, having been, like, for example, you know Jason Burmes and Webster Tarpley, obviously. Do you know who gave them their first radio show? Danny Romero from American Freedom Radio, when he was the program director of Republic Broadcast Network. When it was dithering and dying and the advertising dollars were down, Danny's had this brilliant idea. You know all these great guests that we have and these pretty average hosts that we've got? Well, why don't we give these great guests their own radio shows? And he did, and it was remarkably successful. That's what he does. He spots talent, brings it in, and he expects loyalty as a result of that. Now, personally, I would have liked to have gone on Republic and Orion and American Freedom Radio at the same time so that I'm producing 6 hours of content a day. Oh, yeah. That would have, what was his name? George Norrie. He used to host a morning show in St. Louis for 4 hours and then had to skip across town to go to the Coast to Coast studios to host Coast to Coast AM for 4 hours into the wee small hours of the night. Horrific radio scheduling. But he was the man. And he did it. And now he got 29, 35 million listeners. A night. You got to work really, really hard and produce a hell of a lot of content before you get up there. And most people don't want to get there because it requires them to, well, take time away from their life. Take time away from their families. But yeah, anyway. Don't really know.
So that's another big part of division just between humanity is ego and competition. And it's probably another reason why everybody getting together in one big group would never work.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, if a snake has one head, that head can be cut off. What I prefer is the tactic of the cactus. For every conspiracy, for every town, there is an activist. You know what I'm saying? Somebody being there for like 5 years, working away, going to the council meetings, taking notes or something like that. These people are freaking everywhere. Now, what my goal is to unite them, but not control them. Okay? The platform that Alex Jones has, it's the Alex Jones Show, and he has control over that platform. Okay? Me, personally, the Vinnie Eastwood Show, I ensure that I have much less control of my platform, much less control of my choice of guests, and in fact, I abdicate that responsibility to my listeners. My listeners are the ones who feed me my guests, and it's my dedication as a public servant, I believe, in the fourth estate being the media, even though I have no training or technical responsibility that was imposed on me. This is what I want to do. Okay, so I do.
Well,
I
I'm
do.
Just saying, Vinnie, that you know, let's say you reach 100,000 people a day on your show. I don't understand a station owner basically saying, no, you can't reach 400,000. I mean, the very governing model that Danny has set up, I don't know how any guys go along with that. I mean, I don't.
I put it down to the fact that he didn't think I was ready to do 4 hours a day or 6 hours.
That's not up to him.
However, I experimented. 2 weeks from the time of being offered these extra shows, I had scheduled an extra hour to 2 hours of guests after my show that I would record via Skype only and upload it to the YouTube channel. I burnt out within a week and a half, and I'm still actually trying to recover from it 2.5 weeks on. Danny was right. That's the problem with dealing with him, is that he's right. You can't argue. He knows. He's got the experience. He's got the expertise. And he loves me. Absolutely loves me. Professes it all the time. And attempts to protect me. in every single way that he can. That is what trust and loyalty is. Even though you may not understand the position of somebody who is perhaps older and maybe wiser than you, doesn't mean you shouldn't listen. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to the show today. It's been the Siobhan Cyrese Show, hosted by Vinnie Eastwood, sitting in her hair from the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Is Vinnie with a Y? Because it's the most important question. We'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen, at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. And thank you guys for all calling in and participating in this little discussion here. Catch you later.